St. Augustine of Hippo noted, "Some people, in order to discover God, read books. But there is a great book, the very appearance of created things. Look above you. Look below you. Read it. God, whom you want to discover, never wrote that book with ink. Instead, he set before your eyes the things that he made. Can you ask for a louder voice than that?" This is the After Dinner Scholar from Wyoming Catholic College, and I'm your host, Dr. Jim Tonkowicz. This past Sunday, our new freshmen, all 68 of them, attended early Mass, grabbed a breakfast burrito, and hopped into vans along with backpacks filled to the brim for their 21-day expedition. Before they left, as usual, we reminded them that in freshman theology they'll be studying God's second book, the Bible. In the wilderness, they should read their Bibles, but they're to concentrate on God's first book, the created world. Mountains, rivers, rocks, trees, flowers, soil, birds, animals. That being said, however, in addition to studying the Bible, freshman year they'll also be studying mountains, rivers, rocks, trees, flowers, soil, birds, and animals in a more systematic way in their course on field science. Dr. Paul Giesting has just joined the faculty of Wyoming Catholic College to teach, among other things, field science. I asked Dr. Giesting to tell us a little bit about his background.
I grew up on a farm in Indiana. They brought me home from the hospital to an 8-acre pig farm in southeast Indiana. So the size of the community is very much like Lander. It's about a town of about 5,000 people. When I was 13, we moved to my grandfather's farm, which is about 400 acres. And so it has a creek, pasture. As soon as my dad took over from my grandfather, he got rid of the cattle. So now he has to mow it, but then the cattle don't get out. So he was always more enthusiastic about hogs than he was about cattle. And of course it has, he still raises corn and soybeans. And back when the cattle were around, we had wheat and grew hay for the cattle. So I come from a farming background and in the very humid area of southeast Indiana, which is a very different climate than here. Even though, in terms of a rural background, it's not so dissimilar from Lander.
How did you get interested in geology?
I started reading at a young age, started getting very interested in math at a young age, and it progressed from math to actually chemistry. And then I always wanted to get to the bottom of things. And so where do our chemicals come from? I guess they come from the earth, right? So I became very interested in minerals. That was my introduction to geology. And so I took 3 years of the geology project in 4-H. I'm a 10-year 4-H member. Also took the weeds project. And of course, 10 years of hogs, because that was what our family had. So that was my introduction to geology. And what really sealed the deal in terms of my deciding to major that in college was that my father has a sister who married a fellow from Hawaii and moved out there. So we went to visit them in 1996, which would have been my junior year of high school. And so we visited the Big Island, and of course, just seeing it is amazing. And then to follow it up with and securely tamp it down in my brain is the most fascinating thing I had come across. There was a book called Volcanoes in the Sea that some of the very leading authorities on Hawaiian geology in the mid to late 20th century had put together. And it was the most fascinating thing I had ever read, certainly in science. And that made my decision. I was going to become a geology major.
I took geology 101 in college just for the fun of it.
Yeah.
I think I was a senior at the time.
Okay.
The professor had been out at the Mid-Ocean Ridge.
Oh, yeah.
When an island was being formed. And it was back in the day. He had slides.
Surtsey in Iceland, maybe?
I don't remember. He had slides and he had a cassette recording of the sound.
Yeah.
And we were spellbound.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah,
nice,
yeah.
Fresh geology. None of this leftover geology from
millions
of years ago.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, and I gravitated. There's a divide within geology between what we call hard rock and soft rock. Mm-hmm. I'm very much a hard rock guy. And, to take a slightly theological take on it, hard rock is more, it's igneous and metamorphic. And igneous in particular is, as you say, it's sort of the creative side. This is new. This is, when Kilauea erupts and adds brand new land to the island of Hawaii. You're sort of watching the creative forces of the earth still at work.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you interviewed for this position, you took us all out to a spot locally called Johnny Behind the Rocks and explained something of geology, the geology of the place, to professors of theology, literature, and philosophy. And I must say, you held us spellbound. Everybody was just eyes on the rocks. What makes our local geology especially interesting, assuming that it is especially interesting?
Well, we can make an argument from authority in the sense that I actually I went to Washington University in St. Louis, which at that era did not have its own field camp. So I went to the University of Missouri's field camp, which is up in Sinks Canyon.
Down the road, yeah.
And it's been there for, I think, 100 years. Don't quote me on that. But you can look up the Branson Field Lab and find that out. It's been there for a very long time because the rocks here are magnificent and splendid. And that very outcrop, I spent two-ish weeks mapping back in the year 2000 as part of field camp. And why are they, you know, it's a direct argument for why they're interesting. I mean, they're right there at the surface. If you compare to, you know, going to field trips in Missouri, well, it rains in Missouri, and there's all these plants, and plants are wonderful, but they get in the way of the rocks. And then there's just, I mean, and at Johnny Behind the Rocks, which we call Derby Dome, it's still kind of cognitive dissonance for me to think of, oh, that's right, they call it Johnny Behind the Rocks now. It has such brightly colored, I mean, you know, just at a very basic level, those beautiful red and purple and orange rocks, you know, you can see the strata, they just jump right out at you. They're very dramatic. And so you can see the structures, the way that they're bent, the angles at which they're laying, all that sort of structural geology that tells us how the Earth was, you know, to look at it in a certain way, tortured to create the Wind Rivers as we have them, yeah, and the other mountains and basins in Wyoming as we have them.
You know, we went out there with Dr. Stan Grove at a Wyoming School of Catholic Thought, and I'd been out to Johnny Behind the Rocks hiking any number of times,
mm-hmm,
but not really looking at the rocks, looking at the scenery, but not looking at the rocks, and it's
right.
Different, right?
Right.
And we drove into the parking lot, I looked, and I got, everything's tilted, and it's tilted at like a 45-degree angle.
Yes.
It's amazing.
Yes. Until you go a little ways down the highway, and then you notice it's almost flat, and it is tilting a little bit in the other direction. But something has happened. Something has happened here. The Earth is telling us something.
Yeah. Well, and we can, just looking around, mm-hmm, I have one of my best buddies is a geologist, and we haven't been on a car trip in a long time, but when we go on car trips together, mm-hmm, I'm always like, Don, what's that rock? What's that rock? Why is that rock?
That's a famous trap question for a geologist. We know we can't identify rocks from the car window. We can guess.
Well, he blames it all on glaciers.
Glaciers are powerful. That's why Indiana looks the way that it does.
What do you want students to understand about our local geology and about geology in general as you teach them field science?
It's going to be a challenge because there's the natural urge. You know, I have encountered so many beautiful things about the geology here that are just out of scope, as it were. You know, this is Wyoming Catholic College is here, and I'm enthused to be a part of it because it is giving people a generalist education. And so more than trying to, you know, take a shelf full of facts and like dump them into their heads, obviously what I want is for them to grasp general principles. And to learn in the context of field science to have their eyes open and to ask questions and just develop that skill more so than memorizing facts, much more so than memorizing facts.
Yeah, things like if you've got a rock here and it's got a granite intrusion,
mm-hmm,
which came first, the rock or the
right,
intrusion?
Exactly. Yeah. If you see this black rock cutting through another one, oh yeah, I bet that's a mafic dike. And if I look at the sides of it and notice, oh, these grains are more coarser next to the dike because they heated up and they, mm-hmm, recrystallized. Oh, yeah, that dike is later than the rock that it intrudes.
Yep.
Steno's principles.
Contact metamorphism, I still remember
contact
that.
Contact metamorphism, yes, indeed.
Now, in addition to geology, which is your home court, you'll be explaining and identifying birds, flowers, shrubs, animal tracks, aquatic insects, and I'm not sure what all else. How does that wall work out for a geologist?
Someone told me a while back, probably 12 to 15 years ago, that you would end up teaching a lot of courses that you never took as an academic, and that's already been true for me well before coming to Wyoming Catholic. It's a little hair-raising, but it's also, I'm here partly because my interests are so broad. Like I mentioned deliberately that I'd taken the weeds project, and now those specific plants, I expect to see almost none of them out here in Wyoming. But nevertheless, the idea of, you know, again, it's in this case, and maybe I'll almost be a better teacher because I will be learning the general principles, and I won't have that shelf full of facts in my head to try to shove down their throats. We're going to go on a voyage of exploration together. But yeah, no, I have my work cut out for me in the next month, that's for sure.
I like to try to learn one or two new flowers and one or two new birds every year.
That's a great, yes, rather than trying to do it all at once, that's mm-hmm. a great.
Yeah. Now, of all those things, what are you personally most interested in learning about?
Gosh, actually, I think the part that I'm most personally interested in about is actually the astronomy portion of the course. It's one of those things that it's been a nagging, you know, I've loved the stars and read about the stars and looked at the stars in a very, frankly, disordered and inconsistent way. I've many times tried to teach myself the constellations and simply not, followed up on it enough. And of course, out here in Wyoming, it's, you know, we're another mile closer to God, as it were, or at least the heavens, and there's less air between us and them, so they're even easier to see. So I'm really enthusiastic about that, you know, and being able to teach them a little bit about, you know, I mean, it's the oldest science. I mean, you know, as far as things that people looked up or looked around and wanted to know about for their own sake, rather than their own, you know, I want to learn about this because it will help me raise more crops or something along those lines. It's something that's just beautiful in its own sake. It's beautiful, it's mysterious, and it speaks to us about God and the transcendent in a way that, you know, nothing else quite does.
Horribly, horribly cold winter nights with no moon here in Lander are amazing.
Yes.
Just amazing.
I can only imagine, because I haven't been here very much in the wintertime. Actually, my interview was the only time I've been here in the wintertime. And to see just how crisp they must be.
I mean, even from downtown. I mean, you'll go to some place where it's good to look at stars. Downtown isn't one of them. But even just outside my house, the stars are just blazing.
Yeah.
Now, what do you hope students will take away from field science?
The goal of the course is to make people just to increase awareness, almost that, I hate to say it, but this sort of Sherlock Holmes sense of, like, I have both seen and observed, like, you know, as opposed to sort of, you know, I mean, it's so easy, you know, I'm 42, so I turned 21 at the turn of the century, and as I've liked to joke with previous classes of students that I've taught, it meant that at the earliest possible age, I could hitch up my adult diapers and tell people what it was like in the 20th century, because y'all don't know. I grew up at the cusp when the internet came into existence. You know, these digital distractions that we have came into existence. And so I have one foot, you know, still planted in the world of my youth before these things. And then I certainly am, you know, one of the type of people who is very susceptible. You know, I can be carried away by these digital distractions very easily. And so trying to help in any way that I can students to gain that ability to unplug and focus and be present where they're at, and then to be able to, you know, to observe, and definitely to be able to recognize what we bring to the table, what we assume, as opposed to what we actually see. It takes practice to actually see and to allow ourselves to be surprised. That's the fundamental insight of modern science that I actually, I think is perhaps most consistent with Christianity, is that, you know, Jesus Christ came and told us things that we didn't expect. You know, it built on, you know, the revelation of the Old Testament, and yet it took us places we didn't expect. Likewise, prior to the 17th century, the 16th or 17th century, and still to this day, I mean, it's a human thing, we take our own sort of preliminary, you know, hunches, which aren't bad and will actually get us a long way, and did get us a long way, but they aren't true in detail. And if we follow that and let God confront us with the actual situation, the actual truth of things, we discover mysteries we would never have expected. And that the world is deeper and wider and broader. The world, the created world, is deeper and wider and broader than we would ever have thought, and dwarfs us, which gives us, you know, a point of access, I think a very valuable and perhaps underappreciated one, of how, you know, what God must be. I mean, because of course God is limitless, God is infinite. We have no idea what those words actually mean. We throw them around, but we don't know what they mean. We don't really know what a million years means, but we at least, you know, it's hard enough to really think what 1,000 years means. And then what would a million be? It's really almost unthinkable. And the Earth is 4.6 billion. And the universe is 15 billion. And it's of a scale that we can't comprehend spatially as well. All of the, you know, to sort of, you know, open this doorway for people to, for the students to look out of and have that perspective, I guess is perhaps one of, if not the ultimate goal of the course for me.
Great. Well, welcome to Lander.
Thank you.
Let me encourage you to visit Wyoming and revel in the natural beauty all around. Whether you head for the high desert or the high mountains, the goodness of God's creation is writ large here. Having said that, however, let me encourage you first of all to go outside in your neighborhood. Before moving to Lander, my wife and I lived just outside Washington, D.C. in an urbanized area. Nonetheless, I saw fox, red-tailed hawks, flickers, goldfinch, lightning bugs, all sorts of wildflowers and marvelous geology. God's goodness is writ large there as well for those with eyes to see. And as St. Augustine suggested, it is good to develop eyes that see. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.